West Germany, who only 3 decades ago lay in absolute heaps of rubble after Allied bombers, the British night bombers, the Stirlings, Halifaxes, Armstrong, Whitworth, Whitleys, all of the other aircraft, the B-24 Liberators and the B-17Es, were beating Germany to rubble, pounding the cities of the Ruhr. Wuppertal, Mainz, Köln, Essen, Bonn, you name it, Hamburg, Koblenz, Mainz, or did I say that? Berlin, especially. 60, 70, 80, 90% destroyed. Sir Winston Churchill, when he saw some of the rubble over there immediately after the occupation of the city of Berlin by the combined forces under Eisenhower and the Russian field marshal, took one look at that nation and said, Germany will not rise again in 50 years. Other people said, as they saw the destruction, Germany will never rise again. Well, you know, I've been saying for more than 20 years, watch West Germany, because West Germany is going to emerge at the head of a coming United States of Europe. I've been saying for more than 20 years that a coming United States of Europe, it may not be called that, but it's going to be roughly the equivalent of a United States, a power that eventually is going to be 10 nations inside Europe under the dominant leadership of a rearmed, remilitarized Germany, and very likely a reunited Germany. Let's take a quick look at what's been happening in the past couple of 3 decades. After the success of the Western Alliance in World War II and the selling down the river of much of Eastern Europe, the secret deals of Yalta and Potsdam that gave away half of Europe and half of Berlin, that gave only those three narrow corridors of access to a beleaguered city, and that actually set the stage for the post-World War II Cold War of the late 40s, the entire decade of the 50s on into the 1960s, prior to the Vietnam War, we in the United States of America could not seem to understand in the closing moments of World War II that it's quite possible we can have more than one enemy at a time. American troops could fight against the very embodiment of evil. Our men could fight for the corner drugstore, the soda shop, the girl, and the church, and apple pie, and mom, and the family, and everything that Americanism and patriotism and freedom means to us as individuals. But we proved in Vietnam Americans don't know how to fight as legions fight, because we are not mercenary, and even though we exist in a world filled with tigers where a great world power would need legions, America has no legions. And so, therefore, Americans did not know how to fight against political enemies given safe sanctuary with limited political objectives along two peninsular battles, first Korea, then Vietnam, fighting along a purely artificial line drawn by cartographers across a map that recognized no strategic topographical configuration such as confluences of rivers, ridges, mountain ranges, major ports, cities, or the like. But we tried it. We tried it in Korea, and we lost. We tried it in Vietnam, and we lost. Miserable. Vietnam hurt us more than we like to think. Now, given Vietnam, and given the entire post-World War II history, let's just back off a minute and look what happened. Here were the prostrate, defeated, unconditionally surrendered enemies of the United States of America. Then, as Walter Lippmann said clear back in 1952, once we said we could not defend Europe against this new enemy, we woke up, turned around with a gasp of amazement, suddenly seemed to discover that we should have known about all along, which was the Soviet Union. Once we said we could not defend Europe without the Germans, he said in 1952, the Germans were in the driver's seat. And we said we should revitalize and we should rescue the German economy. And so we did, with typical American generosity, and perhaps I should say Uncle Sap instead of Uncle Sam, we sent millions, hundreds of millions, perhaps up into the billions of dollars of the most modern factory equipment that our fantastic factories at that point in time when we were number one. We were the arsenal of democracy. Our GNP was incredible. We had over 8 million men under arms. And you know, in less than 1 year after World War II, this is shocking, this is staggering, but it's true. In less than 1 year after World War II, we were right back down in terms of military personnel to below the pre-1941 level. That says something about the American penchant for war. That says something about whether or not we're a militaristic nation or whether we're a peace-loving people and rather easily taken advantage of, rather foolish, rather childish, immature, perhaps not quite broken in, still a little bit of a tyro when it comes to world power politics. We just don't seem to understand. We're like kids playing with the men. We get taken time and time again. So with Marshall Plan dollars, we revitalized and rebuilt those German factories. They'd been bombed to rubble, many of them, not all of them. It would amaze you to know that German aircraft fighter plane production reached its peaks at the last month or two before World War II. They were actually producing more then than at any other time because they'd hidden so many of those factories in the trees and the small villages and had grown huge trees even on the roofs, and some of them were underground. We don't seem to recognize that. So their factories were still going all right, but we went in there and we rebuilt West Germany to the tune of hundreds of millions in American aid until their factories were even more modern than ours. And then the German willingness to work, the German indomitable spirit of pride in their work, their willingness to work a 65 or a 72-hour week, to get up at 4 o'clock and be to work by 6:15 and not get off until 7 p.m. that night. That was the way they did it in the 1940s and 50s. The people who broke up their own furniture to feed the furnaces at Wolfsburg to create those little beetles that Hitler himself designed to export the Volkswagens across to the United States. Detroit should have awakened in 1946 and 47. We should have seen it coming in the late 40s and early 50s, but we didn't. We just watched an absolute avalanche of what we call little black beetles buzzing around the United States highways, and we in the United States greedily snapped up everything from catcher's mitts to lead pencils made in Japan, a growing stream of television, of everything electronic you can imagine, of cameras that weren't Mickey Mouse and just like child's toys made out of China with a funny, ridiculous little paper mache thing that looked cute, you know, as decoration for the party on the table labeled Made in Japan. No, now suddenly it was everything from men's suits and ladies' clothes and textiles to imported steel for rebar to the wire fencing they're using to fence the range in Texas, and it was coming from West Germany or from Japan. You know, there's got to be something wrong with an economy where the German cartel, such as Volkswagen and others, can put together not only the plant to produce the automobile, but the ship, and to own the shipping lines that carries that plant from the port of Rotterdam, where it's delivered aboard a Volkswagen barge from its factory through the canals and the rivers up the Rhine Canal system in Europe, and then delivered to the dock at Houston. There's got to be something wrong where American raw steel can come out of an American factory, be loaded aboard a German ship in Houston, go to a West German factory via the canals, clear up into the heartland of the Ruhr, be turned into wire, come back on the barge, be loaded back aboard a German ship, come clear across the sea, up into the Gulf, offload barbed wire at Houston and sell it to an American rancher at less money than an American barbed wire manufacturer can. Now, I understand. Don't you? There's got to be a reason. Oh, sure, I know what it is. It's higher standards of living. It's because the guy working in the factory here just got to have more money than those Germans do. I understand. Let's go on to something else then, since we now understand all of that. We in the United States of America have seen a virtual avalanche of trade goods pouring into our country for the past two decades, and we have not known that we've already been at war, and we have been losing that war. It's been a war behind the scenes.